This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a podcast of Checkpoint on Joy 94.9.
You're hanging out on Checkpoint. My name is Jack. I'm in the Joy studio with Elliot. G'day.
Hi, Jack.
And Haley. Hello.
Yo.
And wow, we're in Joy talking about diversity. What a groundbreaking topic. Also, it's Mardi Gras this weekend.
It is Mardi Gras this weekend, and there's a lot of celebrations happening up in Sydney. And what better time to talk about kind of diversity than the week of Pride here in Australia, which is kind of what's kicked off this topic. As you said, we'd like to talk about diversity here at Joy. Any excuse will do, and this is definitely one of those opportunities.
Yeah.
But it's also an opportunity to focus a bit stricter, I think, on the topic and really look at a side of diversity we don't talk about probably enough, which is the side of the industry, developers, and people, you know, within that space. Not just the people playing the games, but the people making the games.
Well, it's arguably more important to have developers because they're the ones really that are sort of shaping a lot of the agenda that we discuss as the media, that players, that audiences discuss, that communities discuss, right?
Yeah, totally.
You're not going to have diverse characters if you don't have diverse developers.
Developers, yeah.
But there's that kind of chicken and egg situation where you're not going to have diverse developers if you don't have diverse characters and therefore diverse gamers playing those characters and wanting to move into that industry.
I think that's a fair argument to make 20 years ago. I mean, I recently moved to Melbourne from Brisbane, so I completely appreciate why you would say that in Brisbane. But like, more like 50 years ago. But we are at a point now where it's like there are so many diverse players, there are so many diverse characters out there, developers. As much as it's not like every character that we come across in a AAA game is like queer, racially diverse, socioeconomically diverse, like all the rest of it, right? Like,
yes.
There has been a lot of progress made.
Oh, absolutely. Good, yeah. But there's still so far to go. And I think a good starting point for this conversation is to actually look at the numbers.
And we've crunched them.
To see what
for
we're...
you.
Yeah.
So
well,
much crunching.
We haven't, but we've taken other people's research.
The International Game Developer Association crunched them for us.
Absolutely. So they actually did a survey back in 2019. So this is one of the most recent data points we could possibly find on this topic. And they are a big institution and organization who does a lot of these research things. And they're well respected in this industry, so it's good to look at their figures kind of and extrapolate that data and see where we're at.
Yes.
So for instance, one of the first data points they uncovered with their game developer survey was that 71% of developers surveyed were male, 24% female, 3% non-binary, and 2% other. Amongst those people, 4% identified as transgender. So, looking specifically at gender roles within game development, I mean, the obvious figure there to extrapolate is that there is a much larger percentage of male developers than of other gender diverse kind of roles.
It goes a long way to explain the mentality amongst game developers. Take the stuff into take the stuff evolving. Trans representation in Cyberpunk 2077 last year, like the entire reason why CD Projekt Red thought it wasn't a problem is because there's so few trans developers in that industry to begin with. Like, no one was there to say, hey, this is not okay, don't do this. They had to wait until a response from the public.
I mean, they didn't necessarily need to wait, but it's it was something that didn't really cross their mind because it is a different environment, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that's one of the reasons that we and so many other people push for diversity in our game development scenes is because diverse voices create better defined characters because it's so hard to write somebody else's story because they're so much better at it than you. It would be so much harder for me to write a trans character than you, Haley, for instance.
There's more weight to it, I imagine.
Like,
you're able to speak more confidently. You're able to speak in a way that, like, people wouldn't call out as incorrect.
Exactly.
Also, like, I mean, we, speaking of CD, like, we saw with The Witcher 3, people were like, why aren't there any black people? Like, what's up with that? And it's because, like, Poland? Poland is very, like, the makeup there is very racially different to the US, right?
Exactly. And the CD Projekt Red based in Poland. So
probably should have clarified that. That's what I was getting to.
No, that's okay.
They don't see a lot of diversity in Poland, and therefore they don't put a lot of diversity into their games.
At least in that perspective, in that aspect. Yeah. Mm.
But it is really interesting because, you know, a lot of this is, we've been speaking for ages about how, you know, there's not enough female protagonists in video games or just even positive female representation as a whole. And there almost is this one-to-one parallel of, well, there's not many female developers either. So the situation kind of worsens when you examine the industry as a whole and try to figure out, well, what do we do to better this?
And, like, this is not to say that developers should shy away just because they don't have a queer developer or a female developer within their team. Doesn't mean they should shy away from writing those stories. But it does mean that, like, because you've got to give it a go to try and, like, put those stories out there regardless. Mm. But it does mean that if you do have those developers in there, even if they're not, like, story stuff, like writing stuff, give them a voice. Like, ask them for their opinion on your story. Get them in, get them involved. Because, like I wouldn't be able to write a... We talked a few episodes ago about love interests and romance during our Valentine's episode.
It's a very intimate episode.
And...
Checkpoint Intimates, check it out.
One of the things we talked about was the fact that there's not a lot of, like, gay male relationships that are presented in any positive kind of... or any light whatsoever. But if people were willing to give that a go and maybe talk to, like, some of the queer males on their team, they could probably have a lot more success putting that into their games.
I think also it comes down to a lot of business realities, right? Like, for the longest time, I mean, I remember when Bioshock Infinite, we were talking about, like, not we were, but, like, people were talking about, like, the box art, and they were like, well, we can't put Elizabeth on the box art because he's going to buy a game with a woman on the front. We're like... Yikes. Yeah, that was a discussion we were having. But on back to sort of reaching out to not necessarily internal staff, but people who have lived experiences. I was fortunate enough to be working with Summerfall Games and Dave Gator, who happens to be the narrative director on that project, as part of that studio, I guess, was reaching out to people on Twitter and being like, hey, look, I'm not a lesbian. Let's talk. Like,
David, you're not?
Like, as hard as it is to believe, right? Like, I romance Dorian too. It's fine. Yeah, you absolutely should be reaching out and trying to, if you're not necessarily in a position to put weight behind something, figuring out how to approach that better. Yeah,
like, if we were working on a game and I was writing, a kind of effeminate gay male character, I wouldn't feel confident in writing that on my own. I'd probably reach out to Jack or... I'm not femme. Elliot, but Jack.
I'm real femme. I'm actually super femme. Incredibly
I was trying to
femme.
Figure out if that was a diss or...
No, it's not a diss. It's a genuine thing. It's okay. Like in the same way if Jack was writing like
Elliot,
a trans...
I'm super femme. What are you talking about? I'm incredibly femme. How dare you even... No, it's fine. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. If, like, Jack was writing a trans character, he'd probably reach out to myself or, like, Ashley or one of the other, like, trans team members to get their opinion on it.
Yeah.
It's like you've got to be willing to reach out and get those stories from the people who have lived them.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, games are just better for it. Like, even if you're somebody sitting at home saying, well, I don't care about representation in my games because I myself am a jackass. But even
what a
that,
quote. What a quote. Guys, even, wrap it up. That's the show. We done.
No. Even for that person, your video games are better off for it because the narrative is richer, more detailed, more real, and more. It's got more parallels with the real world. Like, it's just a better video game because of it, regardless of whether you care about inclusivity or not, which you should care about. Welcome to Checkpoint.
Welcome to Checkpoint. Like, favorite, and subscribe. Slide into our DMs.
Put minorities in your video games.
But if we want to look at some of the stats in non-sexuality or gender roles, we can look at, for instance... ethnic backgrounds, and 81%, according to the exact same survey, identified as white, Caucasian, or European. 10% identified as South or East Asian,
or Southeast Asian, maybe
7%. Yeah, that was included too. 7% Hispanic, 5% Indigenous, and 2% Black or African. Worth pointing out, this survey, 99% of the people who took the survey were Americans, so we're extrapolating data from there, despite the fact that it is an international...
It is true, yeah.
The vast majority of participants were American.
Once again, America is the world.
Yeah, well, pretty much. But America is a good reflection on Australia, so at the very least, we can take that data, A lot of the times.
We're like the more racist version of America.
Oh, God, man. I wouldn't even go that far. It's also worth pointing out, the number of respondents is far less than I would have expected. Only about 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, what? Like, I feel like IGDA Oz gets, like, not that... I mean, obviously not quite close to that number. But not so much so that it's like, this is the world, 1,000 people. And then Australia is like 100.
Exactly.
Like, what?
Yeah, it definitely.
It seems a little bit
long. I noticed that too, and it does suck because this is one of the biggest data points we have in this industry, and it would be great if they had more participants so that the data was more accurate, because 1,116 is what they quote, and in my mind, that's great, and we can take information from that, but it is not representative of the full population. I wonder if...
Of the world.
Yeah. Mm. I wonder if you did an actual statistical significance study, if that would be enough to, you know, be... actually identifiable, but whatever, that's a whole nother conversation. We can still use this data as a jumping off point for a lot of these conversations, because 81% being white, it seems like a lot.
Yeah, and now suddenly, like, CD Projekt Red having like all white people in their fantasy Poland kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it starts to, you start to see why, you know, because not everybody's thinking about this, to be fair. I know here at Joy, we think about this a lot, but not everybody is. A lot of people, and like if you take an indie developer, for instance, who's making their first game, they're probably not thinking about, well, how do I best represent the population? They're probably thinking about, how the hell do I get this out? What am I doing? I just want to tell my own self-contained story. Obviously, the bigger and larger you get, the more social responsibilities you probably should have. But
exactly.
It's not surprising that there are a lot of studios out there that really are just there to tell their own story, and they're not really thinking about diversity as a more kind of global
measure. Again, it varies so much by environment. Like, as much as we can talk about CD Projekt... Poland more broadly being a very sort of ethnically homogenous, is that the correct word? Environment. You know, on the other hand, Melbourne is such an incredibly sort of colourful, vibrant city that, like, I actually had no idea what the hell PR meant until I came here. Not public relations, permanent residency. But you hear that enough from people in Melbourne, but I never once heard that in Brisbane.
Right.
So,
Brisbane,
like,
is a different place.
Well, I mean, look, it's like half the size of Melbourne, but I wouldn't expect it to be so much less relevant for potential immigrants or, like, you know, students or whatever else. You don't really notice little bits and pieces like that until you are kind of... see beyond.
There's too many crocodiles in Queensland, so that's probably why.
There absolutely are, and that's why we need to focus on the real issue. Oh, we're not talking about that.
Sorry, is this a bobcatter thing?
No, or? That's the joke. That's the joke. You're hanging out on Checkpoint. We're talking about diversity in the video game industry.
Let's get to it already!
Looking for some more awesome Checkpoint goodness? We have a huge range of podcasts available to listen to on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you enjoy premium podcasts. All our previous shows and exclusive content is available. You can even listen to us while you game. Just search for Checkpoint on Joy 94.9 and download new episodes every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday.
Heck yeah, you should do that. Go and check out all our podcasts. We have podcasts going up 3 times a week for your pleasure and enjoyment.
We have podcasts out the wazoo.
Oh, out every single
orifice
slot. No. There we go. Hanging out on Checkpoint. My name is Jack. I'm in the studio with head in the gutter, Elliot.
Hi.
And Haley.
Haley.
Also head in the gutter, Haley. Or just me?
Oh, just Haley. Super chaotic, but like, I can't really say that I'm much better.
I'm on the D&D alignment table. I'm what we call chaotic stupid.
Yeah. That's a new one.
Like, that's a D&D alignment. Like, dude, that could just be a regular alignment.
Yeah, exactly. Chaotic stupid. I am chaotic stupid.
You ever worked in customer service? 70% of customers. No, don't worry about it. Anyway, look, we're talking diversity in the video game industry, as hard as it is to believe. We've just been going through some of the numbers from the IGDA, that is the International Game Developers Association. They did an investigation, a report actually, in 2019 around sort of the makeup of the international, the global, if you will, developer pool, which is not necessarily representative of the Australian development pool. But it is fascinating. I love numbers.
Yeah, it's good to crunch a few numbers. And I think
watch other people crunch numbers. I don't want to crunch numbers. I'm too lazy.
Yeah,
don't make me crunch
numbers.
That goes without saying. I hate math. Elliot, you keep math away from me.
I just don't like crunches in general either. Like, all of that.
Crunch the video game industry. CD Projekt. No.
Oh yeah. True. Yeah. But the one aspect of this that we're yet to touch on, and it's really important too, is the aspect of disability and mental health.
Yes.
Because those are elements that also add to a diverse workplace and even more information and pools of knowledge to, you know, utilize within your storytelling. And that was part of this survey as well.
Neurodiversity, if you will.
Neurodiversity. Thank exactly. you. Yeah. That's the perfect word I was looking for.
That's literally what it's called. Yeah.
Yeah. So 11% of those surveyed within the IGDA survey said that they suffered from psychiatric or mental illness. 5% said they were visually impaired. 4% have an intellectual or learning disability, and 4% had a physical disability.
I want to say that, especially with the mental health illness stuff and potentially the intellectual disability, those numbers are probably higher. People are just a little ashamed because there is a stigma around mental illness. Mm-hmm. And I can speak to this as someone who is technically mentally ill.
I mean, technically. Like,
I am mentally ill. Like, let's be honest. I have... Things, brain problems.
There you go. We do.
I have brain problems.
Neurodiversity.
Exactly. So I imagine that number is probably higher, but there are just people who are too ashamed to admit that they have that.
You need to go on valid. Twitter for like 5 minutes and see that the number is way higher than that.
That's
not a dig, but it's like, you see developers.
Honestly,
And it's not like, oh, sometimes they're sad, so they post sad things. It's like, look, this industry is rough. It is crazy how hard it is to try and tie down a job. If you want to pay for a mortgage and you work in games, man.
It will chew you up and spit you out. If you don't enter neurodiverse, you will exit neurodiverse.
Wow.
Because crunch.
Students, you hear that?
Yeah.
That's not a joke.
We're painting a very grim picture of this industry.
Lecturers do it plenty as well. Like, I'm absolutely willing to endorse that.
Yeah, but obviously there's... Yeah, and you're totally right. There'd be so many unreported cases. And I think that's been a problem for these kind of surveys for the longest time as well. Mm. Even when you're talking about sexuality, there are so many unreported sexually diverse people out there because either they're closeted or they're just unaware of their own sexual diversity.
They haven't had the time to think about it.
Well, yeah, but all repressed. Like, it happens. It's true. Really unfortunate.
People
but
grew
it
up
happens.
In Brisbane.
Yeah. Or, like this, we've established that the IGDA is mostly American focused.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that America doesn't have a good healthcare system, and they're essentially a Puritan society or based on Puritan ideals.
Yeah.
So a lot of them are going to be sexually repressed, and a lot of them aren't going to be able to afford a psychologist or a psychiatrist or someone to diagnose their mental illness.
I mean, mental illness, I'm not sure if treatment is the right word, but I mean, like, that's like a thing that Australia has on Medicare, and even then, so many people are like, this ain't enough.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely not enough.
Right?
I mean, I think mental illness more than like anything else is one of these areas that people are still learning about and psychology is still adapting to, and people are still, like, even just on a government level, catching up to what is genuinely a huge problem within the greater society.
That's government in general. Like, government
that's very
does tend to lag a little bit behind. Well, no, it's just like government is such, it's the machine, right? Like, it's got to try and account for so much stuff. I'm not saying it's okay, guys. You can take as long as you want to try and fix Medicare, but like, also, it takes a while.
It's kind of why I'm glad games like Setsuna Sacrifice and the developers behind it kind of existed because they took the time to kind of research.
Setsuna Sacrifice?
Hellblade. Setsuna Sacrifice.
Senua.
Senua.
Setsuna is another game.
I am Senua Sacrifice.
I am flubbing words today. But they took the time to kind of research mental illness and see how it affects it. So I'm glad it's a game that exists. I, as someone who has similar conditions, cannot play that game because sometimes I have trouble.
But doesn't that show how effective and real it is?
That shows how effective it is because it is very much true to life, kind of.
A bit too close to home.
A bit too close to home, but very true to life depiction.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows people who don't experience this exactly what people like myself and others go through.
Mm-hmm.
But and I'm glad, like, it's a game I can't play, but I'm glad it exists.
I mean, we while back when this game initially released, we actually had a member of the Checkpoint team wrote a big feature about how this game was unplayable for them when they suggested that the game was so effective and so well made that it was literally became unplayable because of their own mental health issues,
right.
And it was so triggering that they loved the game, but they can't play the game.
Yeah.
And it's so fascinating that you know, a well-written game with well-researched, diverse people making it, or at just at the very least hiring people in, like, sensibility writers or whatever to you know, provide information and details for this world that not everybody is intimately familiar with, because we can't all know every single thing.
That sounds fake.
Yeah, well, maybe you do, Jack, but...
That is absolutely incorrect.
Jack knows everything.
I will say as well, this is a little bit of a departure from developers necessarily, but on intellectual or learning disabilities and on physical disabilities, I mean, this was something that I'm very much of the mind that Microsoft is leading the charge on, because not really a whole lot of other people in the space do. They made the adaptive controller, was what it was called. And so, like, putting something like that so front and center for such a big sort of proponent of the industry, I think it's important to sort of appreciate, like, acknowledge that some people are actually really, really invested and putting the resources behind it so that we can try and address and make this industry and these experiences more accessible.
When the, like, I'm really glad the adaptive controller exists, but when I when it came out, I did a couple of number crunching myself and figured out that to get all the peripherals and stuff so you could have, like, all the buttons and everything like that to all connected, it would actually cost you like $1,000-something US.
Yeah.
And that's that's a little much. It's like, wow, that's kind of a bit much.
There are cheeky eBay ways to go around it, because it, it uses a standardized port, but the controller itself, from what I recall, is 100 or two.
Yeah.
And then you have individual buttons, which you could probably pin it around like $20. And even then, that's assuming that your like physical disability is sort of even across the board, which might not necessarily be true for a lot of people.
Exactly.
Like, basically, good luck getting that if you're on DSP.
Yeah, essentially. Like, it's one of those things that I'm glad exists, but also it's something that the price point needs to be brought down.
It's also, I mean, the industry in general, I think, has made games more accessible as well, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, through the rise of digital distribution, we've found that the price point of games has become much more flexible. And so people aren't having to go to their local retail store and drop $100 on a game because they have played all the other games. It's like, cool, I can get some free-to-play stuff. I can play some indie games. I've got some sales. As much as people might be like, oh, I don't like the Epic Game Store, in some capacity, that competition has actually really, really helped.
I've definitely come around on the Epic Game Store and, like, the good old Game Store as well. So, like, it's something like that. I've got a big library now on those two as well, so it's...
A thick library with two Cs, if you will.
Thick.
I'm a big fan of Humble, personally.
Humble,
since they also donate money through most of the purchases that you make on that store, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah, 10% charity. Of every purchase or whatever it is, yeah. No, they do a really good job. But I guess this whole conversation of diversity, the question that has to be asked is, what is preventing the industry from being more diverse? What is stopping... You know, let's just take women, for example. What is stopping the 50-50 gender divide that is representative of the population? Why isn't that representative within the video game industry?
I would say it's a bit of a stigma. It's because video game development is seen as a bit of a boys' club.
Mm.
So no woman in their right mind wants to enter a boys' club, because they'll be sitting there, like, you know, minding their own business, and some of the dudes will start talking about their own sexual conquests or, like, something along those lines. It'll be like, I don't want to, like, me as a woman, especially a trans woman, I don't want to, like, sit there and listen to a bunch of guys talk about their latest, like, poon catch or something.
What a way to say it.
Yeah, like, or some other disgusting term that they use for that. I don't want to sit around and listen to that while I'm trying to make a video game.
So do you view that as a stigma, or do you view that as a reality?
It's a bit of both. Like, I mean, it's not going to stop being a boys' club unless we get enough girls or females in there. But yeah, so it's one of those things that it's a reality and a stigma, because women see it as a boys' club, and therefore it stays a boys' club.
And it's also really hard to try and change expectations and people's mindsets within the boys' club. Like, you know, a certain school near Hankton Station might be well known for that. But I mean, like, that, as much as they're like, we're taking a long, hard look at that, like, as an example, right, like, of a boys' club, they might say we're trying to make changes, but, like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see more stories like that coming out of that situation, right?
Yeah, the reality is, it's really hard to change a culture. And as long as the same people remain in charge, especially, or just remain within that workplace, a lot of that culture is going to translate, because it's very, very hard.
It literally sticks.
It's very hard to change behavior. Yeah. It's incredibly hard, and you have to be willing.
I think one of the things that goes a long way to helping change the culture, though, is, like, the outside influences, the gamers themselves. Stuff with, like, streaming and, like, the video content creators and stuff.
Mm.
Like, the diversity within that kind of can help change the perception of gaming as a whole. And it can be a little tough to kind of break through into that kind of space as a, like, a diverse person, a minority, if you will. Mm. I have a bunch of trans friends who do streaming and stuff, and they find it sometimes hard to cultivate an audience because it's just sometimes so inaccessible at times because there's only so few views to go around, but so many more streamers. But, you know, that those cultures can go a long way to help change other cultures.
Yeah, and it is
a domino effect.
It is one big boiling pot at the end of the day. Like, we can talk about the video game industry focusing on developers for this episode, but the reality is, as you just said, Haley, the video game industry is so much bigger than that.
Yeah,
we're part of it as just media. There are streamers. Media, there are public relations people. There are publishers. There are people who work in every single aspect of the video game industry, and they all feed into each other. Yeah. And it's one big culture. And I think, like, proudly speaking, I think Melbourne's culture, at the very least, is, in the video game industry, is super diverse and really friendly and really great in a lot of ways. But does that translate to the rest of the world? Well, I guess not.
Mm.
Well, I mean, look, as much as I wish we could try and get through this entire discussion in a single hour, or two even, every single Saturday on Joy 9.9, we can't. But it's okay, because we're going to be back next week, obviously.
Mm.
Duh. In the meantime, check us out on podcast services everywhere. iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher.
Absolutely.
What are the other ones that we advertise?
iHeartRadio, maybe? I don't know.
No, I don't think so. But we throw out podcasts every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday on Intimates. You guys spoke about...
We talked about the Sonic movie.
Konami-kun.
Oh, that too.
Yeah, that one as well.
So if you want a podcast already available, go listen to Colby talk about the Sonic movie, because that's fantastic.
Is it really, really fanboy?
I love that you say Colby talk about the Sonic the Hedgehog movie, because I edited that. I actually did not listen to it, so I'll take your word for that. But you're like, I didn't talk about it. Colby did. And I'm like, cool, just pin the blame there.
Absolutely.
But if you want more Intimates coming up, I imagine this week, it'll be on podcast services at a certain point. The Konami Code.
Yes. We're talking all about the Konami Code and cheat codes in general.
Yeah.
Should be fun.
It was a very sombering talk.
It was, because unfortunately, well, you'll hear about it in the podcast, unfortunately, the Konami, the guy who made the Konami Code died this week as of recording. So, it came from a somber place, but we had some fun as well. Wow, that's morbid.
Yeah, look, it's the Checkpoint.
Why have I stigmatized?
We have a lot of laughs here at Checkpoint.
If you are hanging out with us on the Community Radio Network across Australia, you can definitely check those out, because then you will get the full picture of Checkpoint, because what you're listening to week on the air is only a snippet of what we actually make. That's pretty much it for this show. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We will be playing some beats to take you out. From what I recall, it is the Temtem anime... It's some Temtem thing and some Fire Emblem thing. You're going to hear it. It's going to be great. We love and appreciate you. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye. Been listening to a Joycast of Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.